Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. You are listening to the Nerdcast, but what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
I got a bad feeling about this.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
Your stunned silence is very reassuring.
Only on Project Nerd.
Hello, all you beautiful nerds. It is the Nerdcast from Project Nerd, brought to you by Geek Garage. It is episode 234, and as you can tell, because I'm doing the introduction, I can't speak. It's either your least favorite or most favorite version of the Nerdcast, the TNA show. I'm your friend Tyler, and I'm joined by my best friend here, Adam. Adam, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
Evening for me, buddy, but I am well. It's kind of cold and gray here, so just been bundled up, drinking hot chocolate, watching scary stuff on TV. Good times.
Scary stuff on TV, getting the old holiday spirit. Anything special?
So Netflix put out The Haunting of Bly House, the kind of spiritual successor to The Haunting on Hill House. Haunting on Hill House, great TV show. If you haven't watched it, definitely do. Haunting of Bly House, I have exactly one episode left. I stopped what would have been finishing the season or the series tonight to come record with you fine folks so you can listen to us talk about nerdy things. It's good so far. Enjoyable. Not as scary as the first, but still pretty good. Good. They tell really good stories.
Fair enough. I'm interested to see it. I really enjoyed Haunting the Hill House, so I'm curious to see. Netflix has done, when they've tried to go scary or go horror, it's been kind of a hit or miss, but I feel like they're getting pretty decent at this point. Like their early attempts at it, what was it? They had that, one of their very, very first originals was like a horror series, horror anthology. Wasn't it like a, Roth work on it?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like one of the very first Netflix originals when they first got into it, like around the same time as like House of Cards and stuff, was like a horror show that lasted like maybe a season, and it was like, eh.
It's possible. Like those early Netflix things, I basically wrote off as this is going to be campy and bad. You know, I think they were already on House of Cards season 2 by the time I got into it. So I don't remember, you know, even having been subscribed since you could only get the DVDs in the mail. I don't remember that. I can't say that I've got that, but they definitely have gotten better.
Hemlock Grove was what it was called.
Oh, I did watch that.
2013. Yeah. So like 7 years ago. It was Eli Roth was the producer. Director.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And you had Bill Skarsgård, who's now quite famous.
Famke Jensen was in it.
Yeah.
I mean, Aaron Douglas was in it. There was a few people. Ted Dykstra was in it. There was quite a few people in
it. It was perfectly fine. There was nothing. That was one of those shows. There's nothing wrong with it, but there was, you know, unless you really like horror stuff, there's nothing right with it either. I wouldn't tell anybody,
run of the mill.
Go watch this. Right. Yeah.
But that was wasn't that one of the first Netflix originals, 2013? That feels around. When did House of Cards start?
Yeah, I'll buy that. That's definitely very, very close to the beginning.
House of Cards' first episode was also 2013. So yeah, it's right around that time. So it was one of the very first shows.
Yeah, and it wasn't, I mean, like I said, it wasn't bad, but it was one of those ones that was convoluted and opaque as a substitution for scary and enthralling. You know what I mean? Like not, they didn't quite do it perfectly, but it's fine. Haunting on Hill House, much, much better. They've definitely gotten better at doing what they do. Not exactly a adaptation. I don't even know if you would call it a spiritual connection to the namesake.
Inspired by?
I don't even know if you could go that far. There is a haunted house and a family. There's no paranormal investigator. There's no hiring random people. I mean, if you've read The Haunting on Hill House, they borrow a bunch of names and they do a bunch of stuff like that. And that's pretty cool. But, you know, it's not the same thing. And I don't know anything about if Haunting on Bly Manor is supposed to be based on something or not, but the season's pretty good. Series pretty good. It's enjoyable. Worth a watch for sure, especially if you do, you know, scary stuff during Halloween or during October in general.
That's good. I'm glad that there's some stuff out there, because outside of like Hemlock Grove, Hill House, and a few others, Netflix's approach to horror, which is not unsimilar to the approach to horror that a lot of production companies have, is horror is cheap. Let's just buy as many of them as we can, put as many of them as we can on TV, and someone will like one of them. And then when someone ends up liking one of them, we'll make it into 17 of them and then move on to the next one. So, I mean, The Babysitter got a sequel. So,
dude, the first one is quite good.
It is. The second not a one horror movie. Does the second one does not understand what's anything about why the first one was good, though.
Yeah, exactly right. All the wrong lessons learned, but that's okay. It's okay. It's all right. There are some good ones out there, and you can find them on Netflix. There's plenty of spooky stuff to watch there and Amazon Prime this month, if that's what you're really wanting.
Yeah. I myself am not a huge horror fan. Like, the classics I love, and every now and then something gets a lot of critical acclaim, I'll watch it, but I don't go out of my way to look for them. Although I do share my account with someone who does that, and whenever they're over here using it, I'll sit and just listen to some bad horror movies in the background, and oh my God, some of them are so bad.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of just bad movies that get made these days. Netflix is particularly questionable with some of their...
I will give Netflix a pass. If they're involved in the actual production of it, usually it's at least average, if not better. But they're very good at, oh, no other company wanted to put this movie out? Sure, we'll buy it for pennies on the dollar and just throw it up on our website because we need content.
Yeah. And for me, it's I have to dig into them a little bit more because I get stuff over here that says Netflix originals that I know it's not a Netflix original.
But it's a Netflix original in the UK.
Right. It's a Netflix original for the UK. It's right. Produced by a company that only puts stuff out in America, or only has the rights to put stuff out in America for whatever reason. And so, yeah.
They do that. They tag that onto it. I mean, they tag it to more and more stuff. They've been doing it to, in the US, they've specifically been doing it to a lot of animation, specifically anime, where anime that you're like, this anime came out like 3 years ago in Japan, like Netflix original now, because they bought all the rights to it in the United States,
right?
Which is always interesting. So
I think the funniest one I've seen for that so far is Star Trek Discovery is on Netflix.
Oh, is that here. A Netflix original?
Yeah, it gets the big in on it, and I'm like, mm-mm.
Well, and like anymore, so many shows are now like, you know, it's not uncommon for five production companies to foot the bill for a show, knowing that they'll get distribution here and they'll get distribution here and they'll get distribution here. But at the same time, yeah, no one in their right mind would ever call any Star Trek show a Netflix original.
Right.
At least not in the United States. So, Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, right now we talk about, you talk about Inspired By, there was a bunch of, and talk about shows in the UK, trailers and teasers for The Watch finally started trickling out. We got some production stills earlier in the season of like a lot of the main characters. But for those you're unaware, for God knows how many years now, the BBC and a production company have been working on an adaptation of the Night Watch or the City Watch books of Terry Pratchett's Discworld series, which Terry Pratchett, obviously, if I had to pick one author, is probably my favorite author all the time. I love the Discworld books. And the City Watch books of the Discworld series are probably some of the most critically acclaimed and some of the most favorite of a lot of people. They have a lot of really great characters like Captain Vimes and Commander Vimes, or Carrot and Angua and Nobby and Colin and stuff like that. So I'm excited about it. But as this production has gone on and on and on and on and on over the years, people have gotten more and more worried, specifically in the sense that at this point, the Pratchett estate and his daughter specifically have disavowed all like connection to this television show. Some of the stills came out that made people a little bit weird. I'm 100% going to watch the show. I'm 100% going to give it a chance. I will say, from watching the trailers, it is a case of, if I just saw this trailer with no context, I'd be like, yeah, I want to see this. I'm interested in what's going on with this. But the fact that it's putting the Discworld name on it, and the Discworld, the characters have names of characters from Discworld, and they're trying to make it a Discworld series, actually upsets me. Like, it's like we were talking about before the show, Adam called it the World War Z problem. Like, this could be a perfectly good television show if you just changed all the names and didn't say it was taking place in Ankh Morpork, or you could make a actual adaptation of the things. But when you try to do both things at once, you don't, instead of making one okay or good thing, you've just made two things worse.
Well, and adaptations are one thing, right? We talk about this a lot, right? I 100% understand that it's really hard to tell a story in a different medium and keep everything the same, right? You can do a lot of stuff in a book that is either very boring or doesn't make any sense in a movie, right? You know, there's a lot of exposition and stuff like that that we, as a reader, we get that as a viewer would be ridiculous.
And Pratchett is a very similar to, I mean, he gets compared to the author all the time, but very similar in to a Douglas Adams, and that a lot of his humor works really well on the page, but if you were to read it out loud, it is not a joke. Like, the joke works because it's written on the page, which is one of those things. So
I get, and I'm okay with, you know, making something and it looking different, but making changes for making changes sake. Like, there's a lot of stuff they did in World War Z, the movie, that aren't necessary to make to translate from movie to, or from book to movie, right? There's a ton of changes that they made. Now, it'd be, I think, damn near impossible to make a quote unquote faithful adaptation page to screen directly. Like, that would be very, very hard. World War Z is such a crazy kind of style of a book written in memory form and all those kinds of things. But they made a bunch of changes that you don't need to make. So, I don't know the Discworld series. I don't know Pratchett's incredibly immersive and in-depth universe.
Listen, there's only like 40 some of them. You should definitely find, like, just take them. You live in England now. I feel like it's easy to find them.
I'm sure that it is.
Just go pick them up.
I need to buy more books. So maybe I'll make that plunge. Who knows? It seems like what you're saying is they made a bunch of changes that weren't necessarily a change that had to be made to convert from book to, in this case, small screen or you know, widescreen giant home TVs.
Yeah. And here's the thing. They're just trailers and teasers. It's hard to make full on judgment calls yet, but they definitely have made some quote unquote choices, and some of them are pretty strong choices. So we'll see what happens. There are a couple of characters that just, you know, out the box are totally different in every way from what they were in the books, but you never know. Like, there's reasons for that. I'm usually not someone who cares about, there's some gender swap characters, which I always think is fascinating. Like, I always think that's always an interesting thing to do to characters. There's some characters that, you know, are fictional races, so you can do whatever you want with them, or fictional species. But then there's some other characters who, like, their appearance is a huge part of, like, their character development and who they are. And when you make a change to that, I'm making this sound worse than it is, but it's really, there's a character in the book named Lady Sybil, who's, like, eventually becomes Sandvine's wife, who in the books, one of her, like, defining characteristics is that she's built like a brick shit house. Like, is just a really large woman. Like, massive. Like, there's entire paragraphs about, like, her standing on stage with a dress and, like, her heaving bosom, like, making people pass out. And, like, she's just a large, large woman, and it's a big part of her character. And now she is a very svelte and sexy woman, you know, just, like, whoop kicking ass and stuff like that. And it's just like, that was an odd choice. I don't know that you needed to go that direction, but it is what it is. We'll see. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch every fucking episode of it. I don't know why I'm acting like I'm not. So it is what it is.
And that's okay, right? Like you said, if it's good, but just different, you can like it for its own thing while still hating it for bastardizing something else, right?
Fine. Yeah. No, there's a lot. I mean, adaptations are definitely hot right now. We just got a first full trailer of The Stand. I don't know if you saw that yet or not.
Yes. Yeah. My wife and I were, it's October. We were talking Stephen King literally earlier today, and I was like, oh yeah, crap, The Stand came out. And I was just like, what? They're making a new Stand? I'm like, yes, they are. And I pull up the trailer and showed her.
So is that one of those, if you're someone who's a producer, you know, someone working on The Stand, you start this project, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and now all of a sudden the world is being destroyed by a horrific virus. and the coming election is being framed by many as a, you know, world-defining battle between good and evil. Are you happy about the turn of events, or are you like, motherfuck, no one's going to want to watch this now?
It might be a little too on the nose. Certainly if I start having dreams impelling me to Nebraska or Las Vegas, I'm going to be starting to get a little concerned. But we watched the trailer and I hadn't really paid attention. I knew Whoopi Goldberg was a Mother Abigail, but I didn't know. I hadn't seen any casting news or remember hearing any casting news about Randall Flagg.
And it's so, Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I love Alexander Skarsgård.
We got to that part, and I was like, oh, that's a fantastic choice. I'm 100% on board with that decision.
And James Marsden showing up.
Yeah.
Just doing James Marsden things. I love it.
Right. So we started, and she goes, oh, wait, it's a series? I'm like, yeah, it's a series, but I'm pretty sure they're doing it full on.
I think it's similar to the original Stand, where it's like a mini series. Like, it'll be a single standalone season, sure. Maybe. I don't know.
But I think we're getting, I would assume, more than the first one was four episodes, right? 4 2-hour blocks on TV.
Like 8 hours.
And a half, right? Yeah. So yeah, it was like 6 or 7 hours altogether. But I think this one, they're going to go longer, right?
As far as I know, I haven't really dug into it that much. I kind of mm-hmm. was not paying attention until the new trailer came. I mean, I remember when some stills came out of Flag and of Mother Abigail, but didn't pay much attention. Now this trailer's out. I need to kind of dig in a little bit more because it's coming and I don't know. It's either going to be like the biggest thing ever or no one's going to watch it.
Right. It's like, well, because I want to say earlier this year, and again, it's just, it's all timing, right? Like it's not anybody's fault. I'm sure nobody had this intention, but what was it? Contagion? I think hit Netflix like in March or April, and it's like
it's been the most watched thing on Netflix right. for months now.
Right, but when I saw it, I'm like, it's like new this week, or you know, new releases or whatever. Because it was Netflix or Amazon over here, and I was flicking through, and I'm like, I wonder what's new. And I'm like, Contagion. I feel like I remember this, and so I watched the trailer, and Laura was in the kitchen. My wife was in the kitchen, and she just turns around and goes, "No," just says no, and turns back around, going back to doing whatever she was doing. And I was like, okay, I guess we're not watching that. We're not quite ready for that one. I did make her watch 28 Days Later in March. So I think maybe that was that kind of changed everything, I think.
Oh, God, 28 Days Later is so good. Yeah, I mean, she's not wrong about the contagion thing. I mean, at this point, I mean, early in the quarantine, maybe, but now that we're in, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's too gone.
Almost been a full year. It's no thank you.
Yeah.
Escapism, broad escapism only at this point.
Only things we've seen before or new stuff that we know is probably not going to have anything to do with that. And I thought that's what season two of The Boys was going to be. I mean, I feel like, did you finish that one, Tyler?
I did. It did not end the way that I was expecting or that I think anyone was expecting. The ending was a little...
Yeah.
The ending was something.
It was. But as we were watching it, like each week, my wife just kept going, what? Well, that, I mean, it was really good and I enjoyed it, but damn, really? That's like a little too much right now, I think. Yeah, a little bit. It's like, but you know, if you're gonna have good commentary about what's going on in the world, it should be a little tough, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know if it needed to be that tough, but we're gonna let it slide. So I don't know. There's some happy things on the horizon. So like for those that are aware that the virtual-ish version of New York City Comic Con is going on right now. So lots of new trailers and clips and stills and announcements coming out. Of those, there's been some interesting ones, like, and some happy ones. We got a clip from Hulu's Animaniacs reboot, which is fantastic. Or, I mean, it's Animaniacs. Right, it's very much Animaniacs perfectly. So I don't know. What else have they announced? We're getting the very, like, the last gasp of Marvel television, pre-Marvel Studios taking over everything. So we're getting Hellstrom. The series comes out about the Hellstrom twins, okay. And the MODOK series, the stop animation, like Patton Oswalt MODOK series is coming out. I think this is the last, these are like the last two shows that kind of weren't given the axe, but that existed or were in production prior to Marvel Studios saying, okay, Marmel Television and Ike Perlmutter are not a thing anymore. We're killing
right,
everything on Netflix is dead. Everything right. on Hulu is dead. You know, everything on ABC is dead. We're killing all these shows. We're bringing it all in house. Basically, if it's not on Disney Plus or in a theater, you know, it's not under our roof. But we're right. going to go ahead and let Hellstrom is going to go ahead and air, as is this MODOK show. So guess, I mean, I don't know.
That's that weird thing. Disney owns Hulu, right?
They own most of Hulu at this point just because right. of, yeah, the way that their deal with Fox worked out. It ends up owning a big chunk of it. It's very interesting because, like, yeah, most of the stuff on Hulu is, I don't know, the owning interest of Hulu is so strange because, and it changed hands so many times throughout its life. So there was a big period of time where most everything on there was like ABC, but then there was a lot of it. There was a lot of NBC and Fox.
Yeah, I remember a lot of on there.
FX like started just putting stuff on Hulu as like that was where it aired stuff. So now, but yeah, because of the way that Disney, like, what's the word I want to look for? They're, you know, when they made their acquisition of, what do you call it? Fox, they now own
20th Century Fox, yeah.
Yeah, they own 67% of it.
That's pretty good.
I think Comcast owns the other like big chunk. And then there's a Japanese like television licensing company that is like a silent partner in it. But I mean, they own most of it. I don't know. I at this point, like, I feel like it was just too big to close. And I feel like they're just going to keep it up to put non Disney branded stuff on. But at the same time, like, they put all the X-Men, and maybe this is just a Marvel time. They put all the X-Men movies and a bunch of other Fox movies on Disney Plus. I thought maybe they would just keep Hulu around to be like things that we don't want the Disney name on, but we own now. Like, that's Hulu's where they go. But they've put a lot of stuff on Disney Plus that I wouldn't expect them to have stuck on Disney Plus. So I don't know. it's definitely where stuff on FX still airs. Like if FX shows still get put there, right. FX and FFX or whatever, all those sort of stuff.
Definitely start. The non-family friendly stuff, right?
A lot of non-family friendly stuff is on there. And there's a lot of shows that previously had deals, like, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a show like Letterkenny, which is like is a Canadian show that then is licensed in the United States through Hulu, and then Hulu ended up paying production for later episodes, for later seasons. And so there's a lot of those kind of weird one-offs where they're, like, not unlike Netflix, like, that's where some content from other countries makes it into the U.S. is through Hulu or Amazon Prime or Netflix or things like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if they're intentional.
It's more successful than Quibi, whatever. So
the thing we can never figure out how to say. I wonder if that was their intention, and with kind of everything going on, and I wonder if they thought that Disney Plus could sustain on the Disney classics for longer, right? Like if people weren't going, you know, if they didn't think about needing new content all of the time. I mean, that's the thing with Netflix. There's always something new on there. Yeah, every week, every month, there's huge titles, old, new, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder if Disney was not prepared for Lion King and Cinderella and all of those not to be able to just keep bringing in people month after month to pay that title or to pay that fee.
You get burned out on it. I remember when I first got it, outside of the Mandalorian, like I definitely watched a bunch of classic stuff on it, but very quickly was like, all right, I mean, that was fun for a minute. I'm over it.
I'm not
going to actively seek those things out. That's those shows or movies and stuff are like, if I'm flipping the channels and I come across the Disney Channel and they're showing Escape from Witch Mountain and it's halfway through, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna watch the end of this or one of the Shaggy Dog movies, but I'm not actually going to go on the thing and be like, you know what? I really want to watch this Halloween. Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Let's do it.
Right. Exactly. Or if you do, you do it once. Like I did it last year in October. I'm not going to watch it again this October. Like, I'm good. I've got my once in a decade Bedknob and Broomstick watch in. So
or that I'm going to boot it up and I'm just going to watch the scene where she, you know, brings all the suits of armor to life and then I'll be done with it.
Right. Yeah,
that's all I need. I don't know. I mean, we've had this conversation many times before, but God, I feel like if you're Disney, you're better off just making one thing and throwing it all into one thing. Because at this point, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, I guess you count ESPN Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, CBS All Access, Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV Plus, and then that doesn't even get into like the niche ones like...
It's not like a Shudder or...
Shudder or Crunchyroll or Rooster Teeth or CISO or Vudu. And then there's those... How many of them aren't even... Like, is Crackle still a thing anymore? Or... And then...
I don't know.
Then there's also like weird pseudo-streaming ones, like channels that have their own, but only through other platforms. Like, you can subscribe to Showtime through Apple TV or through Amazon. Right.
Yeah.
Or you can subscribe to Stars through
Amazon
Prime. Or you can... I was actually trying to consolidate mine recently. So I subscribe to Netflix and Amazon Prime. And up until recently, I subscribed to HBO through Amazon Prime. But I'm going to probably switch that to HBO Max because there's all those shows on HBO Max you don't get if you just subscribe to that. And I subscribe to Stars through Amazon. And then I have Disney Plus. I have Apple TV Plus. And then through my Apple TV, I subscribe to Showtime and CBS All Access. I didn't used to subscribe to Showtime, but I used to subscribe to CBS All Access by itself for $10 a month. But Apple had a deal where for $10 a month, you could get both Showtime and CBS. So I did that. And then I subscribed to Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I'm still subscribed to Hulu is because my Disney Plus is free for a little while longer. Once my Disney Plus becomes not free, I'll do the bundle and do Hulu, Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus all together. I think Peacock's the only big one I don't have, maybe.
So let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
How much would your cable bill be?
God, you know, that's a good question. I was actually thinking about the other day. So it's like, what, $12, $13 for Netflix?
Uh-huh.
Disney Plus is technically still free for me right now, so I'm not paying for that. And Apple TV Plus is still free for me right now, so I'm not paying for that. Those two alone, I'm saving, you know, a solid $20.
Right.
Hulu, I'm paying like $11.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon Prime is hard to calculate because I'm paying a little over $100 a year for other things. In addition to that, paying $15 for HBO Max, paying $10 for CBS All Access and Showtime together, mm-hmm. and then paying $10 for stars or $15 for stars. So 30, yeah. I mean, I'm not quite to $100, but if all the things I'm getting for free weren't anymore, I would probably be right at $100. Maybe I should just go back to pirating stuff again.
If you were to switch to cable, you lose out, I guess, on some of those shows. I mean, some of them are on the streaming service only.
Yeah.
But a bunch of them are going to be on demand through your cable provider because they all have their on-demand channel version or on-demand version of their channel kind of thing. So, I mean, it's hard. Fortunately for me over here, I only have two options really, and it's Netflix and Amazon Prime. I am also doing ESPN Player right now, which is their version of ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
Allows me to stream college football and that kind of stuff. So I got to do that during the winter or during the fall.
Yeah. And then do you use like iPlayer or do you have to have?
So I have a cable package to take care of my licensing and everything like that. And then, yeah, we do through my smart TV, got Channel 4, BBC, I forget what they call the BBC one, all BBC or BBC All or something like that.
So all the BBCs.
Yeah.
Do you get Sky?
Nope. Don't pay for Sky or BT Sport. There's a couple of different like sports packages that I don't get because the plan was things would be better and I could go watch sports at the pub. And
as it turns out,
it's not entirely true right now. So
BT is the one that like usually has like the NFL games and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think BT is where the NFL games live, but unless the Chiefs are coming over here to play, I'm not watching the ones that are over here anyway. So, but I do all that. And then after football season this year, we're going to do BritBox, which is like their version of Hulu. So it's all the old TV shows and stuff like that.
I can actually subscribe to BritBox through Amazon here in the US too.
Can you? Yeah.
Uh-huh. They actually push it pretty hard on Amazon Prime. If you just want to sit down and watch Fawlty Towers for 3 hours.
Because like their streaming services here. So the channel streaming services will let you stream past seasons of shows that are currently still running.
But once it goes off the air.
It's off the air, right, it converts over to BritBox. And you know, it, as a consumer, absolutely fantastic because then it's one price for ITV and
the whole back catalog,
Channel 4, Channel 5, all the BBC channels, right? You get all of their old stuff is in one place. So I don't have a Hulu and a CBS All Access and a Peacock and you know all the different types of channels that I have to pay for. Just the one subscription a month. So I think
that's the channel that's just a guy's Dave. Do you have Dave?
Yeah, I do have Dave. That's a good one. The one we watch the most is Channel 4 because it's got a Great British Bake Off on it now. So that's
Channel 4's got most of the good stuff. They've got Taskmaster used to be on Dave. It's on Channel 4 now.
It's moved to Dave.
You get Taskmaster, uh-huh. and little Alex Horn, and God, I love Taskmaster is one of my favorite British television shows. After like 8 out of 10 Cats Love Countdown, that's probably like my number one.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I mean, there's decent TV over here.
Just love, especially I just love if you me like some,
reality TV or panel shows.
I just love me some panel shows, man. Who doesn't like a good panel show? Who doesn't like to watch comedians just riff on things for an hour?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It is pretty good.
I just want to watch Jimmy Carr make fun of people while they riff on the news. I'm down with this. Is it time for a big fat quiz of everything yet?
And there's a lot of those shows as well. So you've got 8 out of 10 Cats Love Countdown. You've got Mock the Week. And so there's a lot of just funny comedians and presenters.
There's
and
so many of them. Would I lie to you? I feel like that's just half the shows on television in the UK that I just assume are comedian-hosted variety panel shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's much. Like the same rotation of like 30 to 40 comedians. Like, oh, look, it's Catherine Ryan again, which mm-hmm. is fine. But at some point, it's kind of funny. I don't know why we don't have those here. I mean, they've tried to do those here so many times. Like Jimmy Carr tried to do a version of one of those shows over here. They tried to do a Taskmaster over here. They've tried to do a lot of those panel shows over here. They just don't work. And I don't know why.
No, I don't know either. And we've talked about this before. There's all sorts of stuff over here that just you'd never get an American version of Gogglebox or like so many of the shows. And I don't know why, because Americans, you know, like being on TV, I would think so.
Have you watched Naked Attraction yet?
You know who I'm married to. What do you think?
I would assume yes.
Yeah, we have. Yes, we have.
I feel like the minute I saw that television show, I like the one of the first people I thought of is like Laura would think this is the greatest television show ever made. There's a lot happening there that's both funny and human, but that's also like there's some psychology going on there that's I can't work with.
Yeah, no, it was so it's really, really bizarre because the number of people that find like even though they're like the first ones voted off that find it like weirdly not empowering, but like affirming. And they're like, you know, yeah, they got sent home by the person, but they're like, you know, it's really nice to hear somebody say something nice. And cause like all the like people making the choices, they have nothing but nice things to say about these naked bodies that are in front of them, which is really, you know, I suppose quite a British thing. And they're not just going to trash people.
Well, not to their face,
not to their naked nethers either, apparently. And so, you know, they talk about how nice it is to hear somebody say something nice about maybe a part of their anatomy that they don't like.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
we're pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's the thing about British reality TV, right? You watch all these things and these competitions and you're trying to beat the other person, like Great British Bake Off and a bunch of the other shows, and they all help each other. And it's the most wild thing, because I think an American version of, you know, Great American Bake Off, they would literally be tripping each other as they were walking around.
Oh, it'd be part of the show. You get bonus points if you manage to screw someone else's dish. Right,
yeah.
What was the one that Alton Brown did for just a minute where it was like you got given money and you could pay to like sabotage other people?
Oh, yeah. I guess they have done shows like that on the Food Network, haven't they?
Yeah,
oh
my gosh. Alton Brown was the host of it. What was that one called? He gave everyone had like a certain amount of cash and you had to like buy ingredients, but you could also buy things to like F over other people. What was that?
I don't know. I don't know, but I do remember seeing something about that. Yeah, that's wild.
What was
So like, you know, reality TV here.
Cutthroat Kitchen.
Yeah, my wife really likes it because it is, you know, weirdly affirming in this idea of most people are good people and will do the right thing if they're given the chance. And it's nice to see that on TV sometimes.
We used to sort of kind of believe that over here. We do not at all anymore. That is a quaint and antiquated thought, school of thought. What else is going on in the world that's not terrible and awful?
We are 5 weeks. Well, you guys are 4 weeks from a new PlayStation.
It's true.
5 weeks from a new PlayStation over here. That's solid. I'm very excited about that.
God, it's so exciting.
I was able to get one and I am very, very excited. Day one, I will be that's a Friday, I think. Thursday. I will be playing all of the Demon Souls.
Well, that's exciting.
In glorious giant TV with gorgeous graphics and all of the death, and I'll probably break my new controller right away. It'll be great.
I mean, that's what Demon Souls is all about. We are, what, 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks away from The Mandalorian in both of our countries at the same time this time?
It is.
It is coming out in both places at the same time. You don't have to wait a year to watch it.
No, but I am probably, and we were talking about paying for streaming services, I'm probably going to hold off until they're all out.
That's dumb. You're dumb.
Something and then
dumb
just things. Pick it up and go from there. I don't know. I'll see what I can talk my wife into.
I mean, we're going to still talk about it on here regardless of whether or not you're watching it. So
it's fine. We did it last year too. I managed to make it like 6 months without having anything dramatically spoiled for me. So I'll be all right.
Yeah. I mean, they did. I'm impressed at how good a job they did. I think the big thing was obviously not because so many spoilers anymore come out of the toy companies, but like the fact that they kept the child a secret for so long was real impressive.
Especially do you think they knew how big it was going to be? I feel
like they had to. Like you couldn't have been in the presence of that little puppet and not been like, oh man, people are gonna fucking love this. I mean, when you're on set and Werner Herzog is going nuts about it, being like, this is the greatest thing ever, like, yeah, that's gotta tell you something, I feel like. I mean, all right, Werner Herzog is the child's biggest fan, so.
Right. That's fair. Yeah, no, that's very exciting. More Mandalorian, I'm all on board with. And then I'm committing right now, Tyler. On air, so everybody knows, I'm going to get through the new Dresden File book this month, but I'm going to go back to Changes and read from Changes forward.
Oh, that's a lot of books.
What Changes is what, 10 out of 15, 12 out of 15?
This Battleground was 19.
No, yeah. 16. Well, yeah. Battleground, I got to do...
You still haven't done Peace Talks, too. Have you?
Yeah, I got to do Peace Talks and Battleground.
Yeah, or sorry, Battleground is 17.
Yeah. So I'm going to do 12, 13, 14, 15 to get back into the swing. So it's been 2 years since I've read a.
So you're going to go Changes. Book. So if you go all the way back to Changes, you have to do Changes, Ghost Stories, mm-hmm. Cold Days, Skin Game, Peace Talks, Battleground.
Yeah. Maybe by the end of November.
I will say Peace Talks is very short.
Mm-hmm.
Peace Talks definitely has a feeling of a publisher force sort of thing. Here's the thing. There was a 6-year gap between Skin Game and almost 6 years between Skin Game and Peace Talks. Skin Game came out in 2015. Peace Talks came out this year. Right. And then, but they released it in July and then in September. Peace Talks is, there's some really cool stuff in Peace Talks. Peace Talks definitely reads like half of the first half of a book or the first third of a book. Mm-hmm. And all number 16 does is set up number 17, which is fine, but 17 was very satisfying. 17 does the most to like upend the things that go on in the world since Changes, which is saying a lot. If you remember all the stuff that changed in Changes, it did.
Yes, yeah, right. Did. No, that's what I mean. That's what I want to go back and really get to. And it's really hard for me to not. I don't need to start all the way over, but I feel like I want to go back and start with White Knight. But that puts me back like 11 books to get all the way through to the end. And I don't know if I got that commitment right now.
Trying to think. White Knight would mean,
I think that's back to 7.
White Knight's like 9.
Okay.
Because 7 is Deadbeat. It's zombie. It's Deadbeat. Zombie. Yeah. Deadbeat's one of the best.
Yeah, it's so good.
He rides Sue into battle, man. So cool.
Laura started, and that's the one she always gets to and then stops reading. And then she'll go like 6 or 7 months and then she'll start over. So she's reread books like the first 3.
God, they're so bad. I mean, here's
she's reread Stormfront, so
Stormfront and Full Moon especially are like, whew. He has improved a lot since then. Like Stormfront is almost unreadable at this point, and Full Moon's pretty close. But
if you go back and you think that's his first ever novel.
Oh, I know. I mean, it was written it was written over, 20 years ago. So, but it's pretty rough.
But it's not as good, not nearly as good as he gets.
It definitely reads as a book that was almost titled Semi-Auto Magic, because that's what he almost called it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he changed it.
Also, Stormfront's, as time goes on and on, is a more and more problematic name for a thing.
Well, and I guess the reason this is on my mind, it's Halloween, or it's October. My wife gets a October Halloween spooky kind of theme tattoo every year.
Yes.
Recently, this is a new thing, so this is the third year she's done it, and her Halloween tattoo this year is a artist's rendition of Harry's gravestone. So I sent you the picture this weekend.
I saw it
a couple days ago. So
it's real good.
Just happened Friday. So she's got the gravestone, and here lies Harry Dresden, he died doing the right thing, quote from it. Cause like I said, she's read those books a bunch of times. And then she gets sidetracked and has to start all over.
Yeah. His gravestone makes an appearance in Battleground.
No. Well, that makes sense.
Not for any reason you might think, but.
Well, I mean, just based on the name.
Some things happen, man. Things happen. Things happen.
Yeah, I really need to get back into them because I enjoy the hell out of those books.
Yeah, it was a lot. I'm curious to see what's going to happen next. I really want him to do, now that those are back and rolling again, I need him to go and write another Cinder Spire series. I really like the first one of those.
Yeah.
Those are really fun.
Yeah. So we've been talking about I've been talking a lot about Jim Butcher. So everybody who's listening, if you don't know, we're talking about Jim Butcher. He's the author of Dresden Files and Codex Alera, which is another series, and a
Cinder Spires
series, which is
steampunk and airships.
One that he started, and he wrote one, and it's this fantastic, crazy kind of story that only Jim Butcher could write. And he just hasn't picked it back up. But that's what now, like, that's also like 6 or 7 years old, right, Tyler?
Cinder Spires came out Aeronauts Windlass came out in 2015. It came out a year after Changes.
Did it? Okay.
So, so not Changes, Skin Game. Is that right?
Well, Skin Game.
Yeah, it came out in
2015.
It came out right after Skin Game. Yeah, right, it came out the same year as Skin Game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like him to revisit that world as well.
Yeah, because it came out, because Skin Game was the last Dresden. It came out after that, and then we didn't get any book from him until this year from either. Right. Now, granted, there was a lot of things going on in his life and moving. There's all sorts of things. So these things happen. He's not our bitch. He doesn't have to write at our speed, but.
Well, I mean, he spoiled us, though, because
he did. He was very prolific
for 15 years.
I mean,
Codex Alera.
Stormfront came out in paperback in
2002 or 2000.
2000.
Yeah.
And so we got 15 yeah, I mean,
Dresden
we got
Files books, 6 Codex Alera,
15 Dresden Files, and A.
And the first of the Sinisphere Spear. So that's what, 22 books in 15 years?
Plus at least one collection of short stories, if not, no, Briefcases wasn't until 2018. So Side Jobs came out in 2010. So that was like 11 short stories.
And then he made us go 5.5 years before he did
anything else. Listen, I'm going to let it slide because I have waited longer for less. So
ain't that the truth?
I mean, I'll always fault, people always point to George R. R. Martin, but my point of reference will always be The Wheel of Time. Because, I got into The Wheel of Time late. Like when I picked up my first Wheel of Time book was in 97, 98. And by that time, there was already, what was there? When did the first one come out? 1990, I think, is when Eye of the World was published.
Sure.
So when I picked up my very first one, there were 7 books in the series. And I read all 7 of them, or 6 of them. I caught up basically within a year, less than a year, probably like 6 months I caught up.
Yeah.
And then was reading each and every one as they came out. And then he died.
Can't fault him for that, though.
I mean, I get it. It's not his fault. And then Brandon Sanderson took over and wrote 3 more. So between me reading the first book and me reading the last book was 15 years.
Yeah.
And for people who read the first book when it came out, it was 23 years.
How many books altogether?
14. 14. Okay. Yeah. The other problem with those books is, unlike something like the Dresden Files, it would be more comparable to say, like, have you read the what do you call it? Stormlight Archives, the Brandon Sanderson series. Have we talked about this?
Yes. Yeah. I've read the first
one. Way of Kings and...
Halfway through the first one. And then got cross-eyed from trying to keep everything in my head.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. The shortest book in the series of Wheel of Time is, in hardback, 550 pages. And the longest one is 900 and change.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, like, the average audiobook length of those ranges anywhere from 30 to 40 hours. So, I mean, the very first book in the series is 700 pages. It's a 29.5-hour audiobook.
Good.
And that's pretty, and the shortest one is 24-hour audiobook, but the longest one is 41 hours, almost 42 hours as audiobook. I have a bunch of them on my shelf, and they're each one's like in paperback is like 3 inches thick. So
honking, yeah. Good grief.
Yeah, they were a long read. So that series is, everything obviously is slowed down for COVID, but new stuff pops up all the time about Amazon's making that into a series, and they've made many fanboys mad, which is always a fun thing. So
doesn't everything these days?
Well, people have strong opinions about the skin color of characters that lived in a place that was completely and utterly made up. Apparently there's a lot of rules in their head about what people should look like if they're from very specific area of a very specific country that totally exists only in the imagination of a certain human being who wrote this book literally 30 some years ago. So,
right. Yeah.
Let me tell you about the ethnic makeup of the Two Rivers of Andor. Shut the fuck up. You're wrong. I don't know. I don't even know what's going on anymore. Time has no meaning. Time is a flat circle. I don't know what day it is.
So I was talking about this the other day. I was trying to figure out like the timing of something, like how long it's been since something happened. I was like, oh, it's like 2 years. And I stopped and I'm like, nope, that's 3 years ago. Because apparently I've just ignored everything
that happened this year. Yeah. That's happened to me a lot this lately. I was trying to explain something to someone. I was like, well, I went there. I was trying to explain the last time I had been in, was it California or something like that? And I was like, yeah, I was back in February of, oh yeah, that was 5 years ago. Yeah, that was 5 years ago that I did that. That was half a decade ago.
Right.
As it turns out.
Good times.
Ugh. I don't know. Good things are coming. It can't stay terrible forever, right?
I believe what you're looking for is that it can't rain all the time.
It can't. It's impossible. It is a meteorological impossibility, I think. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I don't know enough about rain clouds to make that call.
Well, I trust, what is it, Eric Draven? Isn't that his thing, The Crow? Can't rain all the time?
You're probably
in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. So
I'd have to remember the comic. I can't dig that deep.
What is good? Oh, you know what? I'll tell you something good. There was teases. There was a panel, like an online panel for New York Comic Con for What We Do in the Shadows Season 3. And I'm real pumped about that because that show is awesome. That's Halloween themed. Vampires Living in Long Island. I love that show so much.
And Halloween themed.
That show's
so feel like that's the...
I was so concerned. That's
the apotheosis of this episode right there, right? We're going right to it.
I was so worried when I heard they were making a television out of, even though I knew Taika was working on it and Jermaine was working on it, I was so concerned when they said they were making an American-based television show of What We Do in the Shadows of the movie. Well, the show is so good. Everything about it is perfect.
Why can't I think of the actor's name? Why is it...
Is on the show?
Yeah, the British guy who's in IT Crowd.
Oh, yeah. It's Matt. He's the guy from Toast of London.
Yeah.
Matt. Why can't I think of his name?
See? This is where I'm at as well.
Matt Berry. There it is. Matt Berry. Yeah, fantastic. The one who plays Laszlo.
Right. Yeah.
Or what's his name? What's his bartender name? Montana? Dantana? Something Dantana?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That episode where Hamill's he becomes a bartender because Mark Hamill's after him and they end up fighting with pool cues and it's a whole thing and it's fantastic.
No, yes, that is something good and something Halloween or October-y, spooky related, spooky adjacent at very least. It's vampires, so it fits.
I love it. I feel like there's been some other stuff at New York City Comic Con that I'm forgetting about. What other? Oh, we got a trailer for Monster Hunter the movie, which is a interesting game. It's an interesting game franchise to make a movie of.
It really is.
I mean, there is sort of a story to each of them, but not really. It's really about let's go kill these monsters over and over again so we can take pieces of them and make them into big weapons to kill bigger monsters so we can take pieces of them. But then you find out who's directing it and who's starring in it, and it makes so much more sense. And the answer to that is Mila Jovovich and Paul W.S. Anderson. So,
right. And I mean, maybe this is going to end up actually being genius. Maybe you take a movie, you take a game that doesn't really have a story, and it allows you to tell any story you want. So you don't get people pissed off at you for not telling the story from this one game. You know,
if
you were going to make Final Fantasy VII the movie, you're going to anger everybody. Literally everyone's going to be mad at you for all of eternity. But if you're going to make Monster Hunter the game, you know, the game Monster Hunter into a movie, you don't have a story to butcher. You can make your own horrible story and people might enjoy it.
Here's my only concern with it is I think Monster Hunter the movie only works regardless of story, actor, director, whatever. Only works if you can do a good job depicting, rendering, CG, whatever, all the iconic monsters. Like your Rathalos needs to look spot on. And at this point in his career, I don't know that anyone's going to give Paul W.S. Anderson enough money to make a good Rathalos, nor do I trust him to understand what a good Rathalos looks like.
I mean, is there any chance that they've just hired like the production team from the game?
Maybe.
I mean, we have essentially CGI renderings of all of these things already. They don't need to be recreated, right? Like, can we do that? Do we have the technology? I feel like we have the technology to direct them how we want to. Borrow the coding.
We probably do. It's also Monster, like the trailer, we talked about this earlier. Like, you got to change things. That's fine to change it. But it's obviously some sort of, like the teaser opens with people in like a Jeep with like machine guns and like a 50 cal, like shooting at a monster. Yeah. But then the production stills in the later trailer show them like wearing all the, like carrying the crazy swords and armor. So
right, yeah.
There's either some time travel or there's some weird portal into another dimension sort of bullshit going on. So I don't know. I guess we'll find out. It wouldn't, like, nothing they can come up with.
Nothing would surprise me.
Yeah. Nothing would surprise me at this point. So who knows? Who knows? Well, I don't know. You got anything else? I'm trying to think of other cool stuff that's going on.
We have to touch on the bad news.
What's the bad news that hurt
all of us so much since the last time we recorded.
Listen, I was going to just ignore it and just pretend like
we can't ignore it, Tyler.
Listen, time is a flat circle. October of this year is no different than October of next year at this point.
we need to be here to help each other through this trying time. And we need to help all of our listeners as well.
It's a big push. So I guess so for those of you who don't know what we're hitting at, with all the other movies that have been pushed back out of nowhere, I shouldn't say out of nowhere. We knew it was going to get pushed. I think we were shocked at the extent it got pushed. Denis Villeneuve's Dune for Legendary has been now pushed to October of next year.
Right.
So it got pushed a full almost 12 months back on the schedule, which is a big push. So, I mean, I feel like maybe they're just the first production company to admit that, like, hey, this is going to go on a lot longer than people think. Let's just, instead of doing these little, like, 1 month pushes every month, like, let's just push it back a year and call it a day. I think there's also something said to be there. Like, they feel like they need, this has to have optimal release time for it to be as successful as they want it to be, which is upsetting just based on how much money and time they've already spent, marketing it, that they're going to have to start back over again middle of next year. There's even rumors that maybe they're pushing it back to October next year because they want it to be fresh in people's mind for award season, which would be ballsy for a sci-fi book adaptation. But
I mean, that was my first thought, was they're keeping it the late part of the year because they feel it's going to win something. You gotta look at the technical stuff probably for sure.
Visual effects, obviously, that kind of thing.
Visual effects, right? Sound,
cinematography,
sound editing, cinematography, right? A lot of those, what we think of as the technical awards, but are still unbelievably artful and masterful. The team that Denny usually puts together are phenomenal. But my other thought was then, you know, basically every movie from 2020 got pushed into 2021. How many weekends don't have
already
blockbuster already booked on up. Them already, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to go up against, I mean, you don't want to go up against Wonder Woman 1984. You don't want to go up against Bond. You don't want to deal with any of those other big movies.
You're right. And you here's the
thing. And call it good, right?
Well, and here's the big thing with it. And the only thing I want more than to see this Dune movie is for this Dune movie to be successful enough for them to warrant giving him enough money to continue making them. Specifically, like, if we only get the half of the book, like, if he doesn't get to make the second half, which at this point I think is I don't think he would have signed up to make the first one if they didn't know he was going to be able to make the second one. I feel like this may be, we might be in, I would be surprised to find out that they didn't already film part of the second one in Lord of the Rings style. Like, they had already just
That's what I was going to say. There's no chance of a Fellowship of a Ring. And if it's good, we'll let you do the other ones. Yep. I think he was definitely, you're going to get two. We just don't know.
But I definitely think there's also some gun shyness, because while critically acclaimed and beautiful and award-winning it was, I think they wanted to make more money off of Blade Runner than they did. Blade Runner didn't do with the box office, I think, what they had hoped. And I feel like there's a chance we could have gotten more in that world, possibly, for good or for bad, if that one had been more successful. But as badly as I want to see Dune, I need them to do whatever it takes for them to make sure that he gets to keep making them if he wants to. So,
yeah. So we need the ender, the second half of the first one. And then, I mean, how many do you want? Children? Messiah?
Here's the thing. I think Children and Messiah, as much as Dune is going to be split into two books, I almost feel like Children and Messiah can almost be one book or one movie. Did I say that right? How Dune, the first book, needs to be two movies. I think could be one movie if they needed to, but sure. I'm fine with them being two. There's not a ton that happens in Messiah. All of Messiah is a setup for Children of Dune, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But after that, it's a big God jump. Emperor? You do God Emperor. I don't know that there's a way to translate that successfully. I love God Emperor of Dune. That's probably where I would stop. They start getting, as weird as God Emperor is a beautiful movie, but they start getting super weird, and they also start getting super problematic after God Emperor of Dune.
A little bit.
Bashir Tagh especially is a very problematic character. The Honored Matrons are very, very problematic characters. Like, shit gets, like, for as much as God very Emperor bizarre. Of Dune is weird, everything after it gets real fucking weird. Yeah, so
it turns it up to 11 pretty quickly.
pretty quickly. So
from hanging out at 10.5 already, it's just like, we're way over now.
We have jumped the shark and then some. So
yeah, so that's our sad news.
That was sad.
Which is a bummer. But I'm hopeful, eternally hopeful.
I will say
that it's going to be phenomenal.
My friend and I were actually talking about this for maybe like, one of my friends and I have the same birthday. We usually try to celebrate together just because we're old people now and we don't need to have big birthday celebrations. I'll tell you, the movie Meltdown has caused one thing to happen. And Cinemark specifically, but I think even Drafthouse to a lesser degree, you can rent out an entire theater to yourself for like you and 20 of your friends for practically nothing at this point. So I think I might just, and the options of movies you can choose from is pretty amazing. So at this point, I'm tempted to just rent out a movie theater for my birthday and make everyone watch Blade Runner on the big screen, or 2001 A Space Odyssey on the big screen, or...
Oh my God.
Or just Jurassic Park on the big screen. Like, right? The list of movies to choose from are all pretty awesome. Like, and a lot of them, I almost want to choose an older one just because movies that we never had the chance to see on the big screen. So I've seen 2001 A Space Odyssey on the big screen, but the original Blade Runner on the big screen would be cool.
That would be very cool. Yeah, I got to see some cool, I mean, the Draft House used to do those, you know, those old movies on the big screen a bunch. So I've seen, you know, Akira, and the original Alien was phenomenal on the large screen. Nightmare on Elm Street. Again, stuff I didn't get to see when I was younger is oh, it's so good. But I don't know how you're never going to be wrong with Jurassic Park.
So
I remember that in the theater. I'm old enough to remember movies before it came out and movies after it required theaters to upgrade their sound systems to the full THX stuff. The speaker system and everything, and the processor to handle it all. And it was such a difference and so phenomenal. And it takes me back to 12-year-old Adam, like, shitting his pants in a movie theater about how awesome it was.
So there's two lists that they have. There's a list of, no matter what Cinemark you call, they have this movie for a private screening. And it's got about 20 movies on it. Then they have another list that's, you can get any of these movies as long as you give us 10 days notice and you have to pay extra. So like 2001 A Space Odyssey on there. And then a bunch of horror movies. Casablanca is on the one where you can give them notice and they'll get it for you. The Dark Knight Rises, The Departed. There's a lot of movies on that, but a lot of horror movies, like I said. Like, you can get the original Friday the 13th for, if as long as you give them notice, or original Ghostbusters, or the original Gremlins. Anyway, but the list of ones, and like, they obviously knew what they were, like, they did a really good job of picking movies for this, but here's the list of movies you can choose from. That no matter what Cinemark you call, they've got these ones ready for your private screening. Austin Powers, the first one. Back to the Future, Blade Runner, Dark Knight, Despicable Me, Get Out, The Goonies, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Inception, Jaws, Jurassic Park, The Lego Movie, Mad Max Fury Road, The Matrix, Secret Life of Pets, Space Jam, The Thing, and Wizard of Oz.
That's Carpenter's original The Thing, right?
The original, not 1982.
Not the remake, yeah.
Original, oh, 1982, God, The Thing.
Okay. Damn. Yeah, that's a legit list, and there's enough kid movies in there that parents could do it for, you know, a birthday, since we can't do real birthday parties anymore, and enough really good movies in there that they could get people that are just missing theater to go back to.
But that, yeah, when then you get into the and there's some that are just like kind of surprises, but like our group of friends would be like, fuck yeah, let's get that. Like the list of ones where you could give them notice. A lot of them are, you know, for sure, like E.T. or Elf or Dunkirk or 1917, that kind of stuff. But then there's like little sneaky ones in there, like you can get Event Horizon, or you can you can get The Fifth Element.
Oh, buddy. Yes.
You can get, what are some other like kind of,
I would feel like all the Luc Besson movies can be on there, like Leon the Professional should
you
be
can
on
get,
there.
You can get Hook.
Oh, man, come on.
You can get all three John Wicks.
And it's something crazy, right? Because it's 20 people, but it's something like $250 or $300 or something.
So
right?
If you're, I
mean, it's totally reasonable.
If you're picking like one of the movies on the list that they have, it's like $150 plus like Jesus. discounted, and it's for 20 people, and that's like discounted concessions and stuff like that. If you pick one of the ones that they have to like order in, it's like $200.
Stupid, right?
It's super dumb. Some of the other sneaky ones that get in there, Labyrinth, or I mean, they have all three Indiana Jones movies. I kind of just want to do a triple feature of those. Here's $600, right? Line them up, let's do this.
Right. If I watch all three at once, can we get a, or in a row, give me like discount on the last one?
I think like there's a bunch of them that snuck in there. I was like, there's a couple foreign ones, like Train to Busan is on there, which I think would be really cool on the big screen. And then there's some super, like, once you think about it, it makes sense, but you're like, who decided to put that one on the list? Like, The Three Amigos is rentable for a party.
I mean, if it's one of the theaters that they have where you can also drink alcohol, sure. Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, just
giggle our way through the day. What about like I could see Pan's Labyrinth or something like that ending up on there.
Let's check. They are in alphabetical order. Where are the... I don't see Pan's Labyrinth.
I mean, maybe it's a bit.
A lot of holiday ones. I see Rise of the Guardians, Polar Express, mm-hmm, lots of mm-hmm. horror ones. So the original Nightmare on Elm Street, original 13th, Friday 13th. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of like recent-ish ones like The Nun, Annabelle.
Basically the whole Blumhouse catalog.
A lot of Blumhouse movies. Lot of Bloom, and then there's some classic Scorsese. So Goodfellas on the list, The Departed is on the list. A lot of feel good 80s movies. Dirty Dancing's on the list. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is on the list.
All the John Hughes movies, 16 Candles.
I don't see 16 Candles. That
kind of stuff, no.
And I don't see like Weird Science or anything like that. Knives Out is on the list. The new Sonic the Hedgehog movies. Oh nope, 16 Candles is on the list. There it is. Found it. Shawshank Redemption. The original Scream. Saving Private Ryan, Rudy and Rocky. Get your sports movies in.
Yeah, any of those for £200 or $200, like, yeah. That seems legit. I don't know if we've got that over here.
Is Cinemark, does Cinemark run theaters in the UK? I know Regal is like the big UK one and they shut everything down.
Yeah, they don't run as Regal over here. They run as Cineworld.
But they shut everything down. Right, Regal shut everything down in the US and everything in Cineworld shut down. So
Yeah. They're done, but we've got Odeon and a couple others over here. Yeah,
I would definitely look it up. Silence of the Lambs is an option.
Mm. But I mean, we're showing movies.
That's true. You guys, like, I mean, there are theaters here that are still showing movies, but just, you know, they can't sell any tickets.
Not enough to hold anything out, right?
So, and there's no movies coming out, so.
Right.
They need to do something. This is perfectly, I mean, here, I will give you $200, no problem, for 20 of us to go watch whatever I want, you know, of this list. I might do it more than, if it's awesome the first time, I might do it more than once.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be pretty easy to get people to chip in $10 or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's cheaper than a regular movie ticket, and you get to watch the exact movie you want to watch.
Yeah, even if I only got...
You've seen it on the big screen.
Even if I only got like 10 people to chip in $10, I would put the other $100 and invite 20 people to do this. Like,
Yeah, hell yeah.
It'd be worth it.
I think so.
I wouldn't have a problem paying $100 to go sit in a theater and watch 2001 A Space Odyssey by myself.
That's what I was going to say. If this goes on much longer, I would get the impression, like, I'm not paying for gas because I'm not going anywhere. And for me, I'm not taking the tube anywhere. So, you know, it's like 60 pounds a week right there that I'm saving. So, like, all right, yeah.
100
pounds? No problem. Sure, whatever.
Let's do it. My only, like, newfound expense is all the DoorDash I've been getting. That's about it.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, that's a thing.
Lots of DoorDash. All right, well, we just read a list for about 10 minutes, and I know how much Iggy loves that, so we should probably... It was a good list.
And we're not sponsored by any of these movie companies, just so everybody knows. No. We are just that excited about... seeing stuff on the big screen.
God, it's been so long since I've been in a movie theater, Adam, and I don't know how much longer I can wait.
I did go in at end of August, got to see Tenet, but before then, I mean, it had been like March, because we went and saw, I forget what we saw, something right before the end. Gentlemen, maybe, earlier this year.
I only just watched that last night for the first time. It's okay.
Perfectly good Guy Ritchie movie, right?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But
Hugh Grant's really good in it, and Colin Farrell's really good in it. Those two guys are worth the price of admission.
Right. You get Colin Farrell with his regular accent, which means it's going to be good, and you get Hugh Grant as a scumbag, which
fantastic. Also
means it's going to be good, right? Yeah.
So, well, we should probably wrap it up. So, any final thoughts from you, my friend Adam?
So, something that actually we've been talking about over here as a kind of that time of year. In this cycle of years, every other even number year, we have big things to do as Americans. Voting is a big deal. Figuring out how to do that in a new country is always fun. We do have that figured out. I will be voting. We want to tell all of you, if you are registered, we've missed the registration window, I think, for most places. But if you haven't registered, get registered so you can vote next time. If you are registered, do get out and vote. Find how you can do it, where you are, your precinct, what the rules are, if you can go vote early, if you have to, I don't know if they're doing appointments. I get to use an absentee ballot, so that's what we're doing here, voting from another country. But also find out what's on your ballot and do your research before you do it. Be informed, figure out what the policies are, who the people are, know what you're doing, but go and vote, please.
For the love of God, go vote. When this airs, it's going to be pretty much exactly 3 days, 3 weeks until Election Day. Most workplaces are required to give you time off to vote if you're not able to make time outside of work hours. So make sure that if you haven't yet, get a request in to get time off. Almost every place of business is required by law to be able to give you that time. And like he said, if you haven't checked to see if you're registered, there's a lot of places online that can do it for you. Easiest place, you just go to vote.org. You can, in under 2 minutes, check where you're registered to vote. If you're not, you can still register to vote if registration is still open in your precinct and state. It'll give you all the information around voting by mail. It gives you links to places like Ballotpedia so that you can see all the things that are on your ballot. There's also links to how you can become a poll volunteer or a poll worker. It is a paid job to help work at the polls so that people can get in and out faster. So do it. Please, please, for the love of God, vote. Also, if you haven't filled out your census form, do that too. You can do that from vote.org as well, or just go to census.org. You should fill out your census form. That helps so much that you don't even know. So
yes,
voting is important more so than ever. And the more people that vote, the better represented we as a people are. And democracy doesn't work if people don't vote, as it turns
out.
That's a good final thought. We should just wrap it up right there. Go vote.
That's a win.
With that, we have pretty much done it for this episode of the Nerdcast from Project Nerd, brought to you by Geek Garage, geek-garage.com, your one-stop shop for all your geeky-themed vehicles, comic book-themed vehicles, superhero vehicles. Do you need a Batmobile or the car from Supernatural? What's it called? Doesn't it have a name?
Oh, why did you ask me that?
You're the person who's watched it for 20 years. I'm not, so.
This is true. But I had it in my mind, and then you asked, and then it went away. They call it Baby, for sure. Yeah. I feel like it has another name.
I feel like it has a real name.
Let's go with Baby.
Impala. It's an Impala, or a Jurassic Park Jeep, maybe. Mm-hmm. Or what are some other cool ones that they have? The General Lee is always popular. The DeLorean.
Those are lots of Ectos, right?
Lots of Ecto-1s.
Mm-hmm. Different versions of that you can.
And is that movie ever coming out?
I don't know. I forgot that they were doing that.
There was like a teaser
like
there.
Set like
there was like a trailer. Bill Hader's
farm and everything.
It's in like Oklahoma.
Yeah. Weird.
All right. Well, go vote. Thanks for listening to the Nerdcast. We will see you guys next time. Same nerd channel. Same nerd place. Thanks for listening.
Love you guys.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.